Today on Movie Wildlife, we talk about the snowman and the Florida Project. Movie World Lives. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie World Lives is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or on the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. So I'm going to start this podcast with a warning that my little recording device here is down to one bar. So if we don't make it through the podcast and there's some ridiculous interruption in the middle, that's why.
Oh, when you said that earlier, I wasn't sure what you were referring to, bars. When you say bars, I always think of your phone.
Yeah, I thought
seeing as you've been stuck to your new phone.
Yes, Rashmi's going to talk about. Well, I would actually take up this whole podcast talking about my brand shiny new iPhone 10 or X. It's officially called the 10, although they use the Roman numeral X in all their marketing materials.
So what happened to 9? Everybody wants to know.
7, 8, 9.
Oh, come on.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
Horrible.
It happened to Windows 7 as well. That was weird. They had Windows 7, Windows 8, and then went straight to Windows 10. So there's something bizarre in tech circles about skipping the number 9.
Or maybe they had one and they didn't want that version, right?
I think it's a 10th anniversary phone is what it's meant to be, because the original iPhone came out in 2007, so here you are 10 years later.
Okay.
And I think that was part of the thinking, but...
Will but this isn't a podcast about technology, Joe.
I need to start my own, like...
Yes, as I break Yazdi off from asking more questions about technology.
Will there be an iPhone 23?
You know, I wonder when they will stop.
Yeah.
Have to. Obviously, you have to keep continuing.
Well, sometimes they just stop numbering things, right? After a while, like iPad is, I think, now just called iPad. It's not
iPad 8
or whatever it is.
You should be referencing the year.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
iPhone 2024.
They would love that.
Like Blade Runner.
But then they have multiple. Yeah, but, exactly.
But no, because they still sell the old iPhone like 5 and 6. So who would want to buy like the iPad 2015 in 2007?
That's true.
There are people who'd be like, I don't want that one. Who knows? The marketing people at Apple have this down. We're just talking pointlessly.
Look, winter will be upon us soon.
So
that was my segue into the snowman.
I know, really, right? Really, well, before we do that, we're going to talk about Netflix. We do our routine, regular segment. I can't find anything to watch on Netflix, and we do this because Netflix, being what it is, filled with I don't know what the inventory is, but it's thousands. It might even be tens of thousands of movies. They come, they go, and they're actually quite hard to find. I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And, you know, Yester, you were right. The recommendation engine is broken. I think the thumbs up, thumbs down.
Oh, I hate that.
And the percent match, I don't understand the percent match at all. I'm sure there's some, like, fancy machine learning behind it, but...
I don't even look at the percent match.
Yeah, I tried looking at that the other day, and I was like, there are movies there that I know that I love that I haven't watched on Netflix that are low matches. And so it must be... You know, either we're not feeding it the right data or what. It's just, it's confusing as all heck. So bring back the star ratings.
I know. The 5 stars were good. And you could do half stars and everything. It was good.
Yeah. Oh, the famous half.
why must they rebrand everything? I just noticed that they rebranded Tender Greens.
Oh.
Yes. It's now a horrible font to just greens. And there's a little tender on the top. Oh. And it's this weird font and everything. The menu's changed and they've changed the countertops. And it was a good thing. You don't need to mess with a good thing.
Hmm. So to non-San Diegans, especially non-hipster San Diegans.
Oh, come on.
Tender greens.
As Yazdi moves his long beard off the table.
And scratches my tattoo.
With his nitro brewed coffee and craft beer.
Yes.
So Tender Greens is like an eatery. So they're calling it greens now.
Well, it's still Tender Greens, but they have a giant G and you have to kind of look for the tender.
Oh. Tender's an odd word.
Yeah, tender is an odd word for food.
Yes.
Tender Greens.
But it does sound like loved salad.
I don't know. It doesn't. It's. Maybe Kevin Spacey might like it, but there's something.
Oh, Joseph.
I shouldn't go there, should I?
Netflix picks.
Can I just say, for the record, I am utterly heartbroken about all of this stuff that's happening. I mean, I think it's disgraceful.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't need to get into the politics of it right now. But, oh, my God, Kevin Spacey has been one of my favorite actors for years and years and years. And so I'm heartbroken and disappointed by all of this stuff that's emerging about his behavior, and it's just too bad, because he's for a long time been, you know, really up there in terms of, you know, the respect that I've given him for his work and his so it's too bad.
It's a shame, but you know, you want to be anti-regulation, but you see that in enterprises which are not regulated, people just kind of do what they want, and they get away with it. Well,
and it's bad enough in those that are regulated, so you can see how crazy things can go when there's no regulation.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I guess we should get on with the podcast.
Yes.
So, back to Netflix. Yashmi, Rashmi, what are your picks this week?
Okay, so my pick this week is Woody Allen, whom I love. To Rome with Love is finally on Netflix. So, you know, this isn't one of his best pieces of work, but I find that the more times I watch this movie, the more I get from it. So on initial viewing, I didn't love this one as much as I love all of the others, but it had something smart in it. On second, third, fourth viewing, I was just telling Yazdi, this is a great movie. This is a bunch of like four different vignettes or four different stories that come together. And of course, you know, some of it is looking in the mirror and holding up the mirror to Woody Allen himself. This is one that he stars in. It's got a great cast, including Alec Baldwin, Greta Gerwig, Penelope Cruz, Ellen Page. It's got Jesse Eisenberg. Just a wonderful little movie. And it's obviously set in one of my favorite places, Rome.
Yeah, Woody Allen is
your
Chris Nolan.
Yes.
So,
yes.
I mean,
one of my Chris Nolans. Yes.
But yeah, this is one that I've missed. And it's funny that the ones that you tend to like less are the ones that I like more with Woody Allen.
Well, I think you both tend to like more of the serious Woody Allen, like Match Point and Blue Jasmine.
I love dark Woody Allen.
Yeah, and I do like dark Woody Allen too, because I think it's...
The whimsical stuff?
Yeah, it's smart, but I do like the whimsical stuff is always so fantastical and silly that it's like reading a fairy tale for me, which I really enjoy.
Yeah, it's a piffle. I mean, I saw it and it was kind of fun. And it has five little parts. Some stories are better than others. There's one about some person on a stage.
Yeah.
You know, some weirdness going on. I have some vague recollection of it. I think the Penelope Cruz, who plays a prostitute.
Yeah,
right?
She's fantastic.
She's brilliant. Her part is probably the best. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of a... It's a ball of gas. You know, it's before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrific stuff.
Yeah, see what's on your list. Your
pick? So my list, what's on my list is, my pick is, should I say that again? No.
Yeah, go ahead.
So my pick is a movie called Closed Circuit, a movie that we had all seen.
Yes.
I think a couple of years ago. It kind of didn't get much popularity, but it stars Eric Bana.
Is that like 1985 or 1986?
No, it's 2013.
You're
talking
about Disconnect.
Are you talking
about Short Circuit from the 80s?
Yeah, that's lovely.
Johnny Five, the little robot.
Which you're talking about?
Closed Circuit.
Closed Circuit.
Yes.
Okay, see, that's what happens. Closed Circuit. Not Short Circuit.
So Closed Circuit is kind of topical. It's about this guy who... is presumably a terrorist, and Eric Bana takes up his case in the London court.
Yes, it's set up in London.
Up completely in London, and it stars Rebecca Hall as well, the forever underrated great British actor. And she and Eric Bana are former lovers, which kind of complicates their back and forth proceedings in court. And it's just a very, you know, very, very efficient little courtroom drama / thriller. So definitely would recommend it. I think it's topical.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
And it's set up in London because London apparently is one of the cities that has the most number of cameras. And an event happens that gets supposedly you would think would get captured on film.
Right.
So I think we covered it on the thriller. Podcast. Didn't
we did. Yeah.
Yes, we did cover it in one of our podcasts. It also has Riz Ahmed in it.
Yes, who I love.
That's right. Yes. Gosh. Yeah. So I'm just trying to find a Closed Circuit, but I think Oh, maybe you did a written review of it.
Nope. No, we did. We a discussed review. It. I will find it.
Oh, maybe it was Tribeca.
Before time is up. Go ahead, Joe.
Joe, what's your pick?
My pick is the wonderful little movie called My Life as a Zucchini.
Yes.
It's an animation that was, I think, Oscar nominated last year. And, you know, we were remiss. I think we didn't get through all of the Oscar animations, the full-length ones last year.
It wasn't released until much into this year, like March or April.
Because, I remember seeing the title, and the title was intriguing. It's now popped up on Netflix, and I've had a fair amount of plane time recently with personal and work travel. So, you know, Netflix now allows you to download stuff onto your iPad before you go. And so I thought, let me just pop this one on there. It's an hour and 10 minutes long, and honestly, it's probably about the best time you can spend watching a movie. I found this so wonderfully touching. It's about a little boy who is suddenly orphaned, and the life that ensues with that. It is, have you seen it, Yazdi?
No.
Oh, you should see it.
Rashmi, you will love it.
I immediately got back and told Rashmi that she must see it.
No, no, you didn't get back. You instructed me on the phone.
In fact, that's right.
To stop what I was doing, even though I was 8 hours behind, and watch My Life as a Zucchini.
It's
and just, I think, in fact, you didn't speak to me until I'd watched it.
I think I didn't stop going on until you had correct. Watched it. So, yeah, it's a wonderful little movie. It's got some delightful characters. It has moments of joy, moments of sadness, very deep sadness. I think the movie does speak to, you know, kind of a lot of dark themes. And, you know, as such, it's not necessarily you know, the happiest time that you'll spend. But it really, really deeply affected me. And I can't recommend it highly enough.
I'm going to watch it this evening.
Yeah.
Please do.
It's in French with English subtitles, but it's beautiful.
That's right. Its original really title beautiful. Is Ma Vie de Courgette.
I think there was some confusion because its original title was also My Life as a Courgette.
Yes. No?
Wasn't it?
I think so. It in every other market except the US, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, the Rotten Tomatoes score is 98% here, and it says, My Life as a Zucchini, silly title and adorable characters belie a sober story whose colorful visuals delight the senses even as it braves dark emotional depths. It's wonderful. So, just to recap, so Rashmi, your pick was?
To Run With Love.
And Yazdi?
My pick was Closed Circuit.
And I have My Life as a Zucchini. Plenty to watch on Netflix. Go at it, people. All right, two movies to cover today. We have The Snowman and The Florida Project.
Yes. Killing of a Sacred Deer. You were trying to sneak into this one, weren't you?
Sorry, I was looking at my notes because Rashmi rearranged the podcast 5 times before recording here. So,
see how it's always my fault.
I know, we're totally unprofessional here on Movie Wall. So, but you know, you don't pay anything for this content, so deal with it, people. So, The Snowman?
The Snowman.
Okay, off we go then. I'm going to briefly introduce this one, which I know very little about other than it had Michael Fassbender in it. So this was one of the screenings that unfortunately I missed because I was away. I always like to, Fassbender's a intriguing actor for me, so always interested in what he does. This movie stars both Fassbender and Rebecca Ferguson. It has Charlotte Gainsbourg, Val Kilmer, J.K. Simmons, Chloe Sevigny in it. It's got what a terrific cast it has. And the brief synopsis here is when an elite crime squad's lead detective investigates the disappearance of a victim on the first snow of winter, he fears an elusive serial killer may be active again. With the help of a brilliant recruit, the cop must connect decades-old cases to the brutal new one if he hopes to outwit this unthinkable evil before the next snowfall. Directed by Thomas Alfredson, and again, I've already gone over the cast, so this movie has a wide release and has been out for a week or two now. Guys, what did you think of The Snowman?
So it's directed by Thomas Anderson, who directed Let the Right One In, the original Swedish version, the horror film, which is so good, one of the rare horror films I really love. And then he also directed Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. So, you know, expectations were high. This one, The Snowman, is based on a very popular series of books written by Joe Nesbitt, who is very popular in the thriller genre of books. Mm-hmm. So pretty high pedigree. And with that cast, Michael Fassbender, Rebecca Ferguson, J.K. Simmons, Chloe Sevigny, Toby Jones, all this, you know, very high expectations. The movie's starkly beautiful to look at. It's just gorgeous to look at. And that's where I run out of anything nice to say about the movie. The rest of it is just, it just does not all come together. It's, you know, there's all these red herrings in the movie. It's, you know, it's a serial killer movie. You know, there's a serial killer out there who's killing people. It has, I don't know, I lost track of how many red herrings there are. Hundreds, it seems, of characters. I'm exaggerating, but it seems in retrospect, hundreds of characters who are thrown in as possible suspects. And, you know, at one point, I just could not keep anybody straight. I couldn't figure out who was what, which character was what. It expects you to kind of know certain things. By the time it reached the end, it was just like a giant misfall. Like, I was like, how did this happen? How can this happen?
Rashmi.
Yazdi and I are on the same page. So this is a film with a breathtaking cinematography. From that point of view, it's beautifully filmed at times. And it has so much promise that just never delivers. And I think something may be lost in translation between A, the book and the adaptation. I've heard the book is quite beloved to those who've read them, and these are page turners. And I think also something is lost in a Scandinavian movie that gets translated to a Hollywood or a British Hollywood movie. And we saw this done before with A Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, where the Scandinavian version are so good. And then, you know, the Hollywood version is good, but it lacks the grit. So I think that although this is kind of devoid of color and it's rather cold looking, it's devoid of story. And I predicted who it was probably about halfway through.
No, you did not.
I did. It's in my notes. I'm going to show you. Brought my notes down. Wow. But that doesn't make it bad. That within itself, knowing who the killer may be, doesn't make it bad, because sometimes it's actually fun to see how they right. unravel who the killer will be and what clues he leaves behind or she leaves behind. I agree with Yazdi. There's too many red herrings thrown in, and it feels like those red herrings are there because the story itself doesn't have enough depth. And so you have to put in all of these red herrings to make it more of a story, more
are
of
they
a...
Are they annoying red herrings in that?
No, they're not really. No, plausible. It's just like, it's just... oh, well, that one crossed off, or, oh, that didn't go anywhere, or how does that come together? And so you kind of get to about halfway through and you're thinking, well, how is this all going to come together? And it's just a lot of different strings that you're following along. I mean, I think it has reasonable acting, Yazdi. Mm-hmm. It just feels like, you know, it's a good cast that do the best they can. I found Val Kilmer unrecognizable.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Val Kilmer. I don't know if they... Was that makeup or is that just Val Kilmer in 2017? I mean...
He's not high profile. So when you look at him, he is... like, for me, he's forever the Iceman in Top Gun. You know, right, the young Val Kilmer. And,
yeah.
And the Doors, the guy. The,
yeah.
But it's a two-piece little role. I mean, he doesn't have much to do.
Yeah.
I think he is in one of the finest visual scenes in the movie. It's a shot.
Agree.
It's a shot where it's beautifully shot, but he goes on top of a cliff and shoots a rifle and these birds, due to the sound, and it looks real to me, due to the sound of the rifle, these birds take off. And when they take off, you see there's a body underneath. So it's beautifully done.
Yeah.
But, you know, somebody like Toby Jones, he's there, he has two lines of dialogue, and I can't help but think that there was more here, and it's just been hastily chopped.
Yeah.
And in fact, the director has admitted now on, you know, on several different media that they could only shoot like 85% of principal photography for the movie, that they could not shoot the remaining 15%. I don't know if they ran out of funding or the studio wouldn't let them do it. So it makes sense that it's a little gobbledygook because things don't connect. It tries to do this thing where it says,
that's
you know,
bad.
8 years, you know, 8 years ago, and then it kind of shifts to 8 years ago, but then you lose track of when it got back to the present. It's just, I don't know, it's visually gorgeous, but it just kind of is lost in the way. And I think, you know, there are movies like this, A Girl with the Golden, with the Dragon Tattoo, yeah. Girl on a Train. They're all these very well architecturally, you know, constructed thrillers where it deliberately doesn't tell you who it is until you find out who it is. And I think it's probably the same for this book, but it just, something went wrong in the translation.
Yeah.
And Fassbender really, really needs to get a new agent. He needs to get a new agent. I don't know what's going on with his career. I mean, he's been in one turkey after another. Yeah. He used to be the great big hope of cinema. And, you know, why is he in these rotten movies? This movie has, Martin Scorsese is an executive producer to this movie. So something went really wrong.
In fairness to him, this probably wasn't a bad pick on paper. Just it went wrong. Yeah,
and apparently it seems like, you know, this is probably a lot of the books smushed together or things that happen in other books that they've put in this movie. It's apparently not a good adaptation of the story that's in the book. So I am tempted to read the book because I think it's an interesting story. I can wrap this one up very quickly. This one will melt away quickly. I mean, 4 out of 10.
Ouch.
Yeah, all you need to know is that the lead character's name is Harry Hole. Really? Harry Hole?
Hole.
Yeah.
In Scandinavian.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think you can get away by calling a character Harry Hole. But I mean, I think that says...
That's funny.
You know, I mean, what were they thinking? Anyway, I think it's a classic case. If somebody wants to do a thesis on how things can go wrong in a movie where all the, like, you buy top-notch ingredients from the best grocery stores and then make the most awful meal, then this would be a great case study. Somebody should go behind the scenes here and write a great article about what exactly went wrong. It should be studied.
It should be studied.
I mean, J.K. Simmons is in this movie and he was actually not bad.
Yeah.
But he can do so much better. We've seen him do so much better.
Yeah, and Charlotte Gainsbourg is in a Hollywood movie. And to the movie's credit, it is entirely shot in Oslo. They didn't move this to Chicago and try to Americanize it. You know, like the girl on the train, they tried to.
So that's right, yeah.
You know, but still, I think something went wrong in the piecing of the parts. So 5 out of 10 for me.
Ouch.
Just see it for the visuals. It's just beautifully shot.
Yeah, I'm looking here at the Rotten Tomato score, and boy, 8%. We don't see 8%,
single digits.
Yeah, I mean, that I think is a little bit unfair, but it's not far off.
Yeah.
Such a shame.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move off to sunnier climes with the Florida Project. So, again, I think it's...
me.
Rashmi, okay, you can
introduce. So, the Florida Project tells the story of a precocious 6-year-old and her ragtag group of friends whose summer break is filled with childhood wonder, possibly, and a sense of adventure while the adults around them struggle with hard times. This is actually R-rated. Mm-hmm. It's directed by Sean Baker. Yes, that's Sean Baker of Tangerine fame. And it's written by Chris Burgock and Sean Baker. And it stars William Dafoe, Valeria Cotto, Bria Vinate, mm-hmm. I think I've butchered her name, and Christopher Riviera, amongst others. A bunch of unknowns, actually, other than William Dafoe.
And it's Willem, I think.
Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Joe, you did see this one.
I did, yeah. This is the screening that I saw literally, I think, the night before I took off. So, just for the record here, I really couldn't stand Tangerine. It came with much fanfare from a year or two ago, but I found it's kind of guerrilla filmmaking and, you know, very improvisational. And, you know, even the fact that it was filmed on an iPhone, which was done to much fanfare, which, you know, to the geek in me would be a reason to like the movie, if nothing else, really, really struggled with kind of the very loosey-goosey nature of the way that the movie is kind of assembled. This is more of the same. However, here, I was completely drawn into the world that the movie director has created here with these children, with these, you know, very difficult circumstances. You know, they live in essentially abject poverty. You know, I think the movie, more than anything, felt to me like a piece of social commentary rather than a truly constructed piece of narrative work. But nonetheless, the narrative there is strong. I felt for the children. I felt for their circumstances from the beginning through the end. I didn't know where it was going to go. I felt that there was real danger in this world for them. I thought this was terrific stuff.
Yes, D.
Yeah, I mean, I am a fan of Sean Baker. He's made 3 movies, Starlet, Tangerine, and now The Florida Project. And he seems to have the ability to go with unknown actors and kind of improvise and somehow make it, you know, almost documentary-like. He has this cinema verite kind of gift where I don't know how much... He doesn't seem to value script much, and he goes more for feeling and you know, what you can capture on the screen in the moment. And there's a great scene here about a man with a bird, which some birds which wander into it. And, you know, that obviously is very, very improvised, but it kind of gives you a sense of this world that the movie spends all its time in, which is so close to something that's known worldwide, which is Disney World. And it's kind of shedding light on this people and this other world, which sits much lower on the socioeconomic stratum. But that is their reality. And it's so close to Disney World, and yet it's so caught in this cycle of abject despair. And, you know, any one of us can make a movie about, oh, how badly the world treats, you know, the lowest amongst its citizens. But I think you always run a risk of coming off sounding patronizing or pedantic or judgmental. And he allows each of his characters to be completely unlikable. I mean, you cannot accuse him of making any of his characters the lead. And I'm not just talking about this movie, all of his movies. And I like that he allows these characters to make mistakes over and over again, to kind of not recover from those mistakes. But in by doing so, he makes them very authentic. And so I really enjoyed this movie because it has a lot of empathy for people that, you know, the normal cinema camera has no interest in. You know, it has a group of people that nobody ever considers to tell a story about. So good on him. I really enjoyed it. I have one big problem with the movie. I don't even know if I want to bring it up because it's a spoiler, but that really kind of took away a lot from me. Maybe we can discuss it afterwards, but it's a great film. It's rightly getting a lot of hype.
So I like Tangerine more than Joe, but probably less than you, Yazdi. And I admire that it was shot on an iPhone 5, but I wasn't as moved by that story like some others were. That said, I'll state now, I think Sean Baker is pretty much a genius, and I love this movie. I was so moved by this look behind the Disney curtain at the world that's not generally on display for most of us, either when we visit Florida or even around the country itself. I think the genius of this movie for me is that it's not a feel sad for me movie. It's showing equally the plight of people, but the joys of being a child and the resourcefulness that comes from imagination in a world that's neon and crazy. And remember, we spoke about it a few weeks ago, and we talked about the relationship between the kids and the sense of adventure. This is that feeling on steroids, I think, and it has oodles of it to waste. There's just something so magical about the kids set against this backdrop of this depressing life that's really a reality for many, I think. So I just loved this juxtaposition of an adventurous summer walking along the streets of, you know, Kissimmee with this horrible backdrop of drama going on. Loved this movie.
Yeah. You talk about the relationship between the kids, and I think maybe it's just the way I'm remembering the movie, because I didn't take any notes while I was in there, and I've been through a couple of time zones since then, but I always felt like the camera was down at the level of the children, and that we were looking at the world through their eyes. In many ways, this felt to me like another kid had the camera and was going along with them, kind of following them, because it really did place us right into their...
Yeah, totally.
Into their existence, right? And I think that's a very difficult thing to do without feeling contrived. And I think, you know, there are a couple of moments in this movie where I think it does feel a little forced. The bird scene you spoke about yesterday, I think, to me, is one that, you know, I get why it was left in there, you know, but it also was one of those things that kind of reminded me that this movie, you know, felt very unscripted, and, you know, it was almost like an outtake, you know, spliced into the middle. But nonetheless, I mean, I think for the most part, you know, the view, the kids view into the adult world. You know, we all know what their mother is having to do to put food on the table. You know, the socio-political reasons we will... Well, I won't go into them now, but nonetheless, you know... but you see it very much from their perspective. It's kind of matter-of-fact-like, in the sense that, you know, they don't really need to know, but we know, right? And I think that's very hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, they always say, I don't know who it was who famously said that, you know, if you're a filmmaker, you should, there are two things you should avoid. One is working with animals and the other is working with child actors. And this is a movie which is, like you said, entirely and very deliberately seen through the eyes of the two girls. Primarily the main girl, Mooney, played by Brooklyn Prince, I believe. And it's kind of, you know, you don't realize this until you think about it much later, but it's really, to me, it speaks about so many other things, such as how, by virtue of how these kids have grown up on the fringe of, on the fringes of society, that they have not learned the concept of accountability. They haven't learned the concept of necessarily what most people would consider, you know, right versus wrong, and how society as a whole, by deliberately ignoring or choosing to ignore a certain portion of its own population, is risking having, you know, people grow up with not the right tools. And so it really gets into the big themes. And again, it's very, very risky, I think, for an actor to take, for a filmmaker to take two little girls who are, what, 5 or 6 years old and make a whole film around them. That's very risky. And, you know, it comes off in spades. And I think the movie's getting a lot of praise for, you know, the little girls who are very good in this. But for me, actually, as much as this is a movie told from the perspective of the little girls, it's the adults who really amaze me. Willem Dafoe, I would be horrified if he did not get a Best Supporting Actor nomination. And Willem Dafoe has been in movies forever, and he's done everything. He's done comedy, and he was Jesus Christ, for crying out loud. you know, he's done everything, but here he's a Willem Dafoe I haven't seen before.
Restrained.
And so restrained. And
subtle.
He doesn't have a single scene in the movie which can be shown as a clip, you know, when he's nominated for Best Supporting Actor, because that's not the actor. He doesn't scream, he doesn't shout.
Right, there's no big speeches on soapboxes.
But he's somebody who is part of the cycle of despair, who is trying his best within the constraints of what he can do to do something. And again, this is all, you know...
There's a lot of conjecture, I think, in the movie, right? There's a lot of... Not show but don't tell, but there's a lot of story that's happened that we do get a sense of. And that's very difficult to do, I think.
Yeah.
But there's clearly a huge amount of history that this character brings.
Yeah.
And that, carrying that weight of his history, is what comes through, I think, in the character. And that's what stunned me the most, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he's kind of the heart of the movie, even though the movie is about the two girls. And...
He's the conscience of the movie.
He's the conscience of the movie. Yeah. And it's such a beautiful, understated performance. And I think, unfortunately, by the time I couldn't make it for the screening of the movie. By the time I saw it, you know, this movie had been so hyped that I had unreasonably high expectations. And so
we were like, go see this, Yazdi.
Right. And so exactly. And everybody else was saying the same. And so by the time I saw it, I expected this movie to be like life-changing. Which it's not. It cannot be. But I still greatly appreciate what the movie is trying to do. I think it's, to its great credit, it's just utterly almost militantly devoid of judgment. And it just tells these stories of these people, and you decide how you want to feel about them.
Yeah.
And that's very difficult to make a movie without judgment. The other person, I think, who I'm so surprised is not getting much recognition, is the person who plays Mooney's mom, and her name is Bria Vinite, and this is her first time in a movie, and she's actually an Instagram celebrity, if you can call that. And you know, Sean Baker kind of was auditioning for somebody to play the mom, and very gutsy of him again to pick somebody who has no, you know, movie credits, and you know, pick somebody who is famous for their tattoos on Instagram. But she is so remarkable here, and you know, she in a way explains everything that happens in the movie. She's kind of the driving force behind everything, and just an amazing performance from her as well.
Yeah, not much else to add. I mean, I think this could have gone wrong at so many points, but it just manages to keep real and intriguing, and more importantly, or most importantly, entertaining. Yeah, so basically, you know, I was drawn to sort of smile and laugh at times as much as I was to feel hurt and pained and sad and tears even at some times. Just this is beautiful. I can't say enough. I'm gonna wind this one up. I think this is one of the best movies I've seen that captures the optimism of childhood without being cheesy or overwritten. And totally, Yazdi, I will put Willem Dafoe on my list at the end of the year for best supporting actor. I mean, just stunning. 9 out of 10.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yazdi.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very hard to do this kind of stuff. And what I would recommend people is know that this is a very small, gentle, delicate, inwardly looking movie. Don't expect it. Everything that you need to take away is between the lines in this movie. You have to experience it and take away what you want, and it'll be very richly rewarding. But don't, you know, I don't want people to build very high expectations or buy into the hype. Just go see this movie. I give it 8 out of 10, which may seem a little bit stingy at this point, but it joins the ranks of movies such as Wendy and Lucy and, you know, others which have the heart and affection to look at people who are forgotten pretty much. And it takes a lot of courage to do this without sounding patronizing, and the movie manages to do that, so it's quite remarkable. Go see The Florida Project.
Yeah, and for me, you know, this kind of stuff is hit or miss for me. I do struggle with movies that don't have an overt and very strong central narrative, which this movie does not. It places you, it creates a feeling more than tells a story, if that makes any sense at all. So, you know, with that said, this one does hit for me, unlike, you know, Sean Baker's other movie, Tangerine. So I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10. I think it's a well-deserved 8 out of 10. And I think there's an element, you know, there's the part of me that feels like there's an element of luck in creating this, because you do have these magical moments. But, you know, therein lies the skill of the director. So, you know, I don't want to take too much away from him there.
Yeah, and The Florida Project, just if you're interested, was the name that was given to the Disney Enterprise as Walt Disney was creating Disney World in Florida. So if you recall, for those of you who are Disney fans, Walt Disney had already created Disneyland in California, and basically was trying to create Disney World away from, you know, these seedy parts of Florida. And so basically was buying up plots of land without anyone knowing. And it was called The Florida Project. So it's actually quite a meaningful, I think, title when you look at it that way. And I also did some homework about the movie Closed Circuit. It's actually a lost episode that we never released. It was recorded in 2013 with The World's End and Closed Circuit, and we never released the podcast. So, Joseph, if you so feel like it, you may want to release the lost episode. Dig through the
archives for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm sure I've got them saved somewhere, because I save everything that we record. So,
but we did do a fantastic episode.
It must have been so good. No editing needed there at all.
Yep, there you go.
All right, let's wrap up the podcast for today. Mail at movieworldlaws.com, twitter.com/movieworldlaws, facebook.com/movieworldlaws, instagram.com/movieworldlaws. We should make an acronym. I'm sure there's like Facebook, Instagram, whatever. Let us know what you think of these movies. We'd love to hear from you. Until, I guess, our next podcast, which we're going to record right away. Too many movies, too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.